بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين. أيها الإخوة، باسم مركز الملك فيصل للبحوث والدراسات الإسلامية يسرني أن أرحب بكم أجمل ترحيب، وأشكركم جزيل الشكر على تلبيتكم للدعوة، كما يسرني أيضا ونيابة عنكم أن أرحب بمحاضرنا هذه الليلة سعادة الدكتور دنكن هلدين. ولمن لا يعرفه، فقد حصل الدكتور دنكن هلدين على الماجستير والدكتوراه في الآداب، وقد درس في أكاديمية وجامعة أدنبرا، وتخصص في الأدب العربي والإنجليزي، وقد كان موضوع رسالته في الدكتوراه أو للدكتوراه يدور حول دراسة لمجموعة من المخطوطات العربية المنتشرة في عدد من المكتبات في أوروبا والشرق الأوسط. وقد تم طبع هذه الأطروحة ونشرها في كتاب في سنة 1978 ميلادية تحت عنوان اللوحات المملوكية. التحق الدكتور دنكن بهيئة الإذاعة البريطانية في سنة 1973، ومكث فترة من الزمن في القاهرة ممثلا لهيئة الإذاعة البريطانية في الشرق الأوسط، مما مكنه من مواصلة اهتماماته بالأدب العربي والإسلامي. وفي سنة 1980 تم تعيينه نائبا لمحافظ مكتبة الفنون الوطنية بمتحف فيكتوريا وألبرت، وكان من بين مسؤولياته الإشراف على مقتنيات المكتبة من كتب التراث الإسلامي، وهو الآن يحاضر في مدرسة الدراسات الشرقية والآسيوية في جامعة لندن في طرق تجليد الكتب عند المسلمين، وكذلك الكتب العربية والخط العربي إلى آخره من هذه الأمور، وهو خير من يتكلم عن هذا الموضوع، وهو موضوع محاضرتنا هذه الليلة، فنون تجليد الكتب عند المسلمين. ليس لكونه متخصصا في هذا الموضوع فحسب، بل لأن لديه شغفا وحرصا شديدان على دراسة هذا الجانب عند المسلمين. واسمحوا لي أيها الإخوة أن أذكر قبل أن يبدأ محاضرنا بأمرين: الأول أن المحاضرة باللغة الإنجليزية، ولكنها تترجم فوريا إلى اللغة العربية، ويقوم بترجمتها مع الشكر الأستاذ كمال الهلباوي، ويمكنكم الاستماع إلى الترجمة عن طريق الأجهزة الموجودة معكم. الأمر الثاني، نود أن تكون أو أن الأسئلة ستؤجل إلى نهاية المحاضرة، فنرجو كتابتها على الأوراق الموزعة عليكم ثم إرسالها إلى المنصة. مرة أخرى أرحب بالدكتور دنكن هلدين ويتفضل بإلقاء محاضرته. تفضل.
Gentlemen, academic colleagues and fellow librarians, I should like to begin by extending my thanks, first of all, to Dr. Zayd al-Hussein and the King Faisal Foundation for having invited me here to give this talk to you tonight. And I should like to thank Dr. Zayd and all his staff at the King Faisal Foundation for all the considerable assistance and cooperation that they have extended to me in my brief stay here. I should also like to thank the staff of the British Council and the representative Mr. Radford and Mr. Roman for their assistance in making my stay much more meaningful and enabling me, along with the King Faisal Foundation, to visit a number of libraries and collections of manuscripts in Riyadh. Before I begin talking to you about the bookbindings, I thought it would be useful if I said a word or two about the Victoria and Albert Museum Library, since this should help you to understand why the collection has developed in the way it has, as you will see from some of the slides. The Victoria and Albert Museum developed out of the Great Exhibition, which was held in London in 1851, and was the idea of Prince Albert, who was the husband of Queen Victoria, to develop an educational complex in South Kensington and to enable students of design to come and see the best examples of designs in all the fields of decorative arts, and to stimulate them and to enable them to develop their own designs. Now, the library has collected its objects with that very much in mind. We are not a specialist library of Islamic material only. We are, as Dr. Zaid said in his introductory remarks, the National Art Library of the United Kingdom. But we do have a good representative collection of Islamic manuscripts, bindings, and items of calligraphy. Now, the collection itself was built up in the 19th century by some very astute and discerning collectors. Many of the people who acquired these objects were not specialists in Islam, but I will mention three personalities in particular tonight. The first is General Sir Robert Murdoch Smith. He was the director of the Persian Telegraph Department in Tehran for 20 years, and while he lived in Persia, he purchased a large number of Islamic objects, not only books, but ceramics, glass, and other objects, which he then left to the Victoria and Albert Museum. And in 1885, that is 100 years ago, he became the director of the Royal Scottish Museum in Edinburgh, which also has quite a good representative collection of Islamic decorative arts. The second person who assisted in building up the collection of bookbindings was called Sidney Churchill. He was the secretary to Murdoch Smith in Persia and later became British Consul General in Palermo and Naples in Italy. He was an avid bibliophile and collected a very large library, including a large number of Islamic manuscripts, and on his death in the 1920s, a large part of his collection was left by his widow to the library at the Victoria and Albert Museum. The third person who has played a significant role in the development of the collection was a German orientalist called Bernhard Moritz. Dr. Moritz spent 15 years in Cairo as the director of what was then called the Khedivial Library, now the Darul Kutub, and accumulated a very large collection of Arab manuscripts and bookbindings. His collection is basically divided between the two museums of Islamic art in East and West Berlin, which was of course his hometown, the Oriental Institute at the University of Chicago in the United States, and the Chester Beatty Library in Dublin. But 4 years ago, I was able, through the assistance of a colleague in the book world, and to purchase the remaining collection of Bernhard Moritz, which was then in the possession of an Italian book dealer. So those are the three main personalities I think that I only need mention to you tonight. Now, before actually turning to the Arab bindings as such, I thought, again, it might be useful if I mentioned one or two of the major works in literature which have some bearing on the subject. One of them is called the Nefes of Funun, which was composed between 1335 and 1342 by Muhammad ibn Mahmud al-Amuli. The Uddat al-Katib by Abdullah ibn Hassan Damghani, and the Matla' al-Ulum wa Majma' al-Funun by Wajid Ali, which was written as recently as 1845-1846. A great deal of information on Arab bookbindings is also to be found in two Arab manuscripts. The first is called the Umdat al-Kutab wa Uddat Dawi al-Bab, and the author is Al-Mu'idh ibn Badis, who was born in Al-Mansuriya near Kairouan of the North African dynasty of the Zirids. The other manuscript is the Sana' Tasfir al-Kutub wa Hal al-Dhahab by Abul Abbas Ahmad ibn Muhammad al-Sufyani, which was written at Fez in 1619 by al-Sufyani, who was himself a master binder. There is a great deal of information in these two manuscripts, particularly the work by Ibn Badis. And, for example, he elaborates on the different tools, explaining in one paragraph that there are two types of needles, one that does page sewing, one for binding the book, and he differentiates between the sizes and types. He also comments on the different type of presses used to press the covers and the text block together. And he also describes the actual iron implements used for tooling, such as the gouge, the dot, the polisher, and so on. Now, I don't want to extend that subject in itself is a pretty large subject. What I would like to do now is to go on to some of the slides. What I shall do is, where they do not belong to the Victoria and Albert Museum, I shall specify where the present collection is. Otherwise, you may assume that they are all in our library collection. Now, the Arab bookbindings should be divided really into three different categories: those from Egypt and Syria, those originating in North Africa or the Maghreb, and those from the Yemen and Saudi Arabia. Now, in general, Arab book covers are much simpler and have less elaborate tooled designs than those which were subsequently made in Persia and Turkey. Is it all right? Yes. Now, I start with this reconstruction, as you can see, of the upper and lower covers of a bookbinding, almost certainly made in Egypt from the 10th or the 11th century, which is now in the Walters Art Gallery in Baltimore, in the United States. And one of the things that I would stress, as you all know, there was a very ambitious and well thought out exhibition held here last year called The Unity of Islamic Art. And I think that that title is a very important one, since I think in no other art or civilization is there such a degree of underlying unity in all different aspects of the art. And I think you can see this in some of the bookbinding patterns, which relate very closely to patterns used, for example, in woodwork or in some ivory carving, and later on also when we come to look at some of the Turkish bookbindings, you will see similarities of design used for ceramics and textiles. Now, this is a pair of North African bookbindings from Kairouan, dating to around about the 9th century, and the remarks I was just making, I think, show the very real simplicity that was used, usually with a repeating pattern round the margin, and then a central area, a rectangular area, which was tooled by hand. Quite often these designs were marked out on the leather with a scoring knife, lightly scored, and then these tooled patterns would have been done by hand, and the gold ornamentation added later. And I think that the combination of the natural leather, goatskin was the most commonly used leather, sheepskin is sometimes found, but the combination of the brown natural goatskin and the simple tooled pattern and gold decoration make the early Arab book covers some of the most attractive. I'm sorry if that's a little bit faint. What I wanted to do was again show in the middle part of the picture, you can see a fragment of a Quran binding in a safina form. That is an elongated form. As I'm sure all of you know, the texts that were produced in the early Islamic period, and particularly in North Africa, because Kufic is essentially a very horizontal as opposed to rectangular script, at least Western Kufic, that is, the Qurans and manuscripts tended to follow that pattern and be rectangular rather than horizontal. And you can see a reconstruction down below as to how the original binding must have looked. Now, one of the sources of Arab bookbindings was Coptic bookbinding, which was active in Egypt when the Arabs came from the Arabian Peninsula into Egypt and came into contact with Coptic civilization. These are Coptic bookbindings, and I have put them in. They are from the 9th and 10th centuries, and I have put them in to show how closely some of the early Arab bookbindings I have just shown relate, both in style — they used similar sort of patterns, as you can see from this slide on the right, they used the same leathers, and indeed the Arabs also adopted, more importantly, the same kind of sewing techniques. Obviously, as time progressed, the Arabs developed their own particular techniques, multicoloured headbands and other elaborations, and as I've mentioned, the lisan or flap, which was the hallmark of Islamic bookbinding. But I think it is important to bear in mind that there was this active bookbinding tradition in Egypt from the very early period. We're talking about the 5th and 6th centuries onwards. And I have put these in. They are in the National Library in Cairo. They are all 9th century Arab Quran covers. I have put them in to show both the variety of designs at that period and also for those of you who are familiar with the woodwork that was being produced in Samarra, in Iraq, Mesopotamia, to show the similar kind of beveled styles that were used. Another very early Arab binding is from Egypt. It is in the Museum of Islamic Art in Berlin and dates from the 9th or the 10th centuries. By now you may have noticed that I am very tentative with some of my dates. The reason why I have been tentative is because a large number of bookbindings have become detached from their original manuscripts, and it is very difficult sometimes to say with any certainty both what period a particular binding belongs to and also where it comes from. As far as the latter question is concerned, a considerable amount of research has now been done by a number of scholars, and I have developed some of the ideas that have already been put forward, and I think that one can begin to make some fairly authoritative conclusions as far as the provenance of bookbindings. But as to the date, that is a much more difficult question. Now, this one is interesting because the actual leather is pasted onto a wooden board, and there are very few early Arab covers. There are a few early Arab covers that actually have wooden boards as opposed to paste boards. The traditional Arab book cover is composed of a succession of sheets of paper glued together and then covered with the leather binding, which gives it a great strength as well as a pliability. This is an early Quran cover from the Walters Art Gallery in Baltimore, and what you can begin to see is the development of a traditional format, an elongated format, with the four corner pieces and a central design. This is a book cover from Kairouan in North Africa, probably dating from the 12th or 13th century, and begins to show the intricate geometric patterns that one sees so frequently in central roundels. And this is a rather unusual book cover from Morocco. As you can see, the date is 1256. It's unusual in the way in which the geometric pattern uses the whole space of the cover, and indeed the whole relationship of the pattern to the size of cover is one of the interesting variations in the whole history of Islamic bookbindings. Now, this is a 14th century cover from a Quran, almost certainly made in Egypt, which is now in the British Library in London. It comes from a 30-volume Quran, which was made for one of the Mamluk emirs, Aitmish al-Burjasi, who was one of the military commanders for Sultan Barkuk. And there are comparable covers in the Freer Gallery of Art in Washington, in the United States, and the Walters Art Gallery in Baltimore, in the United States. And one of the book covers that I was able to purchase from the Italian book dealer I mentioned, that was formerly in the Moritz collection, is a half of one of these covers as well, that must have come from the same Quran, because they are all identical sizes and identical patterns. And this slide, which is of the complete cover in the Freer Gallery of Art in Washington shows how beautiful the complete cover must have been. As you can see, you have the upper and lower covers and the Lucerne with these very elaborate corner pieces, but this very effective use of gold to highlight the ornamentation. One of the things that you will see again and again is the development of this scalloped shape round the central roundel. Now I show you a Quran cover, a very large Quran cover, dating probably from the early 15th century, probably made in Egypt, which is in the Victoria and Albert Museum Library. It shows again, as you can see, I hope, the central scalloped medallion, which As-Sufyani calls turunja, or citrus-shaped. One of the aspects of Islamic art that I find most appealing is the way in which designers, whether or not it be textile designers or bookbinding designers or woodwork, is that they wish to create a pattern that is not self-contained, in the sense that that central medallion repeats itself, as you can see, in the four corner pieces, and gives the suggestion that this is an infinite pattern extending itself beyond the margins imposed, obviously, by the shape of the book, in this case a very large Quran. And the next slide, I'm afraid it's a little bit on the dark side. I hope you can see it from where you are sitting. One of the interesting things about this cover is that in Kufic, in stylized Kufic script, round the outer margin, you can see some of the Asma al-Husna of Allah round the border. And in the central panel, you have got this very typical Mamluk geometric pattern. Now, I mentioned a moment ago the way in which book covers were constructed, and when we took this Quran cover for cleaning by our conservation department, we removed the back and we found all these different sheets from various texts, letters, scraps of paper and so on. And one of the means of identifying more certainly where a bookbinding has been made and the possible date is that one can analyze scientifically the type of paper and come to some conclusions, and you can also sometimes reach certain conclusions as a result of finding out what these particular texts might say. And I think I have another one showing a similar back of the other large Quran cover I just showed you, which helps, I hope, to show you how the construction of some of these large covers were made. And indeed, some of the covers that I know you have in your collection here in the King Faisal Foundation Library, as well as some of the other libraries I have been to while I was in Riyadh, are made in the same way, and when the leather begins to lift, one can see the pasteboards with all these different scraps of paper underneath. Now, this is also one of our early Egyptian or Syrian book covers, which is in the Victoria and Albert Museum. One of the interesting things about this, which you cannot possibly see from where you are sitting, is that the spaces between the fillets, which go to form the geometric pattern, are composed of a number of dot punches. And each of those dot punches contains a signature. And in this case, we have a name of either Muhammad Az-Zain or Muhammad Arif, or possibly Muhammad As-Saif. It's a bit difficult to be precise because the binding is now a little bit worn. This is comparatively rare because one does not find, at least in Arab bookbinding, very many bindings with signatures. There are some that were in the Moritz collection, which are now in Chicago, and we also have one in London. But in general, we do not know the names of many bookbinders as opposed to calligraphers, and of course the whole art of calligraphy in terms of the social status it possessed was rather higher than that of the humbler bookbinder. Now this is a large flap, a lucerne, of an Egyptian or Syrian Quran cover, and you can probably see that it has an incomplete inscription from Surat al-Fath along in the central panel. And one of the other interesting things about this flap is that not only do you have the gold illumination, the gold paint and highlights, but you also have got some blue paint used to elaborate the floral work. It's probably a bit difficult to see in the slide, but it is very delicately done. And of course the whole symbolism of colours in Islamic art is a complete subject in its own right, but blue undoubtedly was used frequently for Qurans and covers of other religious books, the Hadith and other similar titles, because of the obvious sense of infinity, the sky, the sea, and God's mercy, which is infinite. This one I've included purely to show the type of central medallion. I will try and bit better. This type of central medallion is found on simple covers from as far afield as Sivas and Konya in Turkey, in Iran, in the South Arabia, the Yemen, North Africa and Egypt, and it's a very typical motif, very widely used. It is very difficult to be precise as to actually where this one comes from, but it's probably of the 15th century. Now this cover is from a tafsir on the Quran by Al-Wahdi, which is in our library, dating from the third quarter of the 15th century. Again, you have a similar central medallion with the scalloped outer shape, and you have the highlights in blue paint. This manuscript will be available in due course in microfilm in the King Faisal Foundation. It is quite an outstanding manuscript in terms of the text and the way in which the text is written and the different colour of inks used. And there is also a very attractive colophon giving details of where it was produced. In fact, this manuscript was made as a waqf for the Sultan Qait Bey, so it's also a fairly typical work of the Mamluk period in Egypt or Syria. Now, this cover is probably from North Africa, also the 14th or the 15th century, showing a rather simpler form of geometric pattern. Obviously came from a comparatively small book. I think what you might be able to see is the way in which the marginal ornamentation was done by means of a small rectangular stamp which was repeated round the border. At that stage, Arab bookbinders were not using rollers to create a continuous pattern. This was adopted later on, particularly by some Persian bookbinders, and of course it's a very typical European method of creating a pattern. But at this stage, a large number of these bindings particularly these borders were composed of continuous small stamp just repeated round the border. This bookbinding was made in North Africa, probably early 15th century. What is interesting about it is that we have analysed the leather and have found that it is sheepskin as opposed to goatskin. It has been dyed a very dark black, and the little rosettes are of white leather, which has been treated by a process called alum tanning. Potash, which is one of the main sources of alum tanning, necessary for alum tanning, produces this very whitened type of leather. And these rosettes were, were cut out and pasted on to the areas between the fillets. And when the binding must have been new and complete, it must have been very striking with this dark sheepskin and these white rosettes. It's a very unusual style of bookbinding. And one of the reasons I consider it to have come from North Africa is partly the style of decoration, partly also some of the textual evidence we found on the reverse. This binding, however, is a little bit more difficult to be precise. What you can see is the scoring lines, both horizontally and vertically, and the bookbinders, of course, used a compass and rulers to mark out their designs, and then quite often worked just by eye, using one of the awls to create the pattern by hand. It's an unusual pattern, and I suspect that it may have come from either North Africa or possibly even Islamic Spain, Al-Andalus, in the 15th century. We don't know so much about bookbinding that was practiced in Islamic Spain, but it's quite possible that this is a manuscript from that part of the Islamic world, and it would be interesting certainly to follow up in libraries in North Africa as to what Islamic books might have come back from Islamic Spain to North Africa in the 15th, 16th centuries. Now this is a cover also of the 15th century, again probably North African from its interlacing design, although similar designs of this sort are also to be found in some South Arabian and Yemeni bookbindings. Here I have shown the open cover of one of our manuscripts entitled the Mukhn al-Labib of Ibn Hisham, which was produced in Egypt in 803, that is 1401. And what I wanted to show, this was a manuscript, as you can possibly see from the title page, that belonged to Sidney Churchill that I mentioned to you at the start of my talk. The doublures, that is the end papers, are made of wooden block-pressed goatskin. And these wooden blocks created a very shallow and delicate pattern on the goatskin, which was used only for the inner covers of these Arab manuscripts. And I have discussed some of these patterns with colleagues who deal with Islamic textiles. We don't, of course, have a great deal of Islamic textiles from the 14th and 15th centuries, for obvious reasons, in existence. And it's quite possible that some of these patterns that you see on the doublures are, in fact, comparable with some of the patterns that were used for costumes and textiles at that same time. There is a person working in the Textile Museum in Ontario who has looked at some textile fragments and considers that this is quite a plausible means of proceeding as to, it's a guesswork if you like, but it is the only possible lead that we might have at this stage. Now, moving on from Arab bookbindings as such. That's better. Moving on to the development of Persian bookbindings. Persian bookbindings initially followed Arab bookbindings to a very great extent. This is in keeping with the fact that during the 14th century, when bookbindings in the Arab world, and in Egypt in particular, were reaching the peak of their development, Arab influence was also manifesting itself in Persia. And the designs on some of the few known Persian bookbindings from this early period are very similar, as I think you can see, to Arab bookbindings in both their design and their finish and their technique. However, with the onset of the 15th century, the artistic stimulus to in the Islamic world was moved eastwards to Persia, and certain fundamental changes took place, which I will elaborate in a moment. This is a Quran cover made in Marare in Persia in 1338. So you see it's comparable in date with some of the Arab bookbindings we have looked at.